Welcome to Inside Out, The Naked Truth. Coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
And nudity is not just skin deep. We do our best to uncover our truth from common and not so common beliefs, perceptions, assumptions, and attitudes. Through conscious conversation, poetry, tonight we're going to do some poetry, music, and a little bit of humor to spice it up.
I am Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And I am an Errol Strider nudist, age 71.
So most newspapers and television and radio has described you.
I have a kind of a signature. I have a brand. That's what it is.
You're branded. You've been branded, but watch out where they put that brand.
Ooh,
when you're not
hurts.
Wearing clothes, it could
that
be
hurts.
Dangerous.
Yeah. That reminds me of the bee bite, but we won't go there.
No, not yet. Tonight's show is brought to you by Go Raw, 100% raw food that not only tastes good, but is good for you.
And you can find Go Raw at Whole Foods and Trader Joe's if you're one of the fortunate few who have a Trader Joe's near you. And, of course, the organic section of Costco, among other places, or just go to their website and find out about Go Raw products.
Which is goraw.com. So, before we say anything more, God.
What?
Is so many things to so many people, including non-existent. Yet even the most ardent atheist or agnostic's logical explanation for existence comes up against the realization that there are some things that can only be described as a mystery. In fact, that is my favorite nomenclature for God, the Creator, the mystery. Where did it all begin? I mean, way back before we even know what beginning means. How did it begin? Is there such a thing as divine intelligence? When I drop into a space where I feel connected to nature, other people, places, or even events, it feels divine, beyond explanation. I feel expanded, joyful. It is somewhat like being with a lover, connecting fully to the moment. Well, what if another way of perceiving God is as a divine lover? What would that be like? Tonight, we are going to take that trip and find out the divine lover.
Exist with me before, but unknowing. I would wrench you from myself in ecstasy, that you may know many-celled glory. I offer you my bowels, my insides I give you to spawn in. My body will be your tabernacle until you are ready to bask in my sight.
I am sorry that you must know tears before laughter, but imperfection's delay is the stuff that sons and daughters are made of. We must be indirect at first, owing to the disparity of our size and nature, but I will shed my absolute cloak and nestle naked with you in the raw earth. Feel under my robe and touch my purity. Let me wrap you in my wholeness.
I look upon your soul's nakedness and would cover you with the garments of progression. Our love will take on new forms so that you may satisfy me with new experience. I will wean you and woo you until you know that you are mine.
You may cavort with other lovers for a time until you know that you know not. Then I will bare my breast and fill you with the rich, sweet textures of my being. For in our coupling, you actualize.
You actualize. It is only as you cling to me that you know fulfillment and become identified. I would feed you with all my charms. Spread your will and open to my caresses. I would be all things to you.
Oh, little seedling, break open and exchange with the earth and the water and with the stars. Drop your outer shell and give forth newness. I yearn for your fullness. Enter into me. For in that friction moistened is the ecstasy of life, creation. Enter into the depth, breadth, and length of my womb, for I am your lover, the infinite.
I would impart my permanence to you, if you will have it. You are after my pattern. You are, for I have decreed that I will impregnate the cosmos with selves, and I will not rest, my child.
My child.
My love.
My love.
Until your face mirrors mine.
Until your face mirrors mine.
Wow. So there you had the divine lover.
I thought we'd have a fun time tonight, having that poem, listening to that poem, and then really getting into it and seeing what it's all about. What's it all about to us, anyway? It's all, like this program, it's the way we look at things, you know? It's our view of the whole, and everybody has a view of it. We put out our view, so you get a little more of a picture.
What's interesting, when you were making your introduction about the atheist and the agnostic, and you talked about the mystery. In many ways, that's an agnostical position.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a word, but it is now.
Yeah. And the thing is that the very fact that we acknowledge it's a mystery says it is something, you know, that we don't know what it is. And I think that I find that fascinating, you know. We could say it's nothing, you know, people say it's nothing, and that's not a mystery. But then if you take the nothing, well, how did this happen? And did it just happen? I mean, does anything just happen? Is there no intelligence behind anything? But I love the idea of being wooed and weaned by this marvelous mystery. I love the idea of being, I just love it.
I'm reminded when I was at Sunday school at the Temple B'nai Yehuda in Kansas City, Missouri. The teacher told the story about Rabbi Hillel, very famous rabbi in Judaism, very wise man. how someone came to him and said, Rabbi, show me God. I want to see God. And the rabbi took him out and he says, look up at the sun. And the man, of course, said, I can't. It's too bright. And he said, if you can't see the sun, which is just one of God's servants, how can you expect to be able to see God?
Wow, that's kind of interesting. That's an interesting illusion.
Yes, and I remember that to this day. And I was, like I said, I was in Sunday school, which, by the way, I flunked twice, which is not easy.
You probably wouldn't have flunked it if it was on Monday.
What has that got to do with it? I flunked it twice, and I flunked 3 semesters of ROTC. I just have this kind
Are they the same?
I hadn't thought of that. And then I got wise when I was like the last year of Sunday school. My dad would drop me off, and shh, don't tell anybody. And that, he would drop me off, and I would go to the little Greasy Spoon restaurant where they had a pinball machine and play pinball for an hour and then come back and have him pick me up. I wonder if that's why I flunked.
Maybe because you weren't there. I'm sure it didn't have anything to do with your intelligence or anything else. But I'd like to get into this piece.
Good, good. Let's get back to it.
And look at it like you exist with me before, but unknowing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just that line in itself, you know, you wrote it, but you exist with me before. It's like, it doesn't matter whether we believe it, something or not. You know, it's like, I could say, I don't believe water. I don't believe in water. And then, but it doesn't matter whether you believe it or not. Water is.
I beg your pardon.
Or air. Like, I don't believe in air because I can't see it, you know. Like, it doesn't mean anything to me.
It reminds me of that joke. There was a visual joke in a cartoon, and there was these two fish in the water, and one fish turns to the other fish and says, where's the water? Isn't that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly what it feels like for me. But I love this. I would wrench you from myself in ecstasy. It's so much a poem about birthing to me, you know, that we come from the womb of this mystery. We come from this womb of infinity. We come from this womb of more than I can fathom, the indescribable womb.
Now, here's an interesting note, if I may. After it says, I would rent you for myself in ecstasy that you may know many-celled glory, I offer you my bowels, my inside that I give you to spawn in. My body will be your tabernacle until you are ready to bask in my sight. And which is interesting when we get to the end of the poem. I feel like we're in an English class analyzing
the
poem. Anyway, but a curious thing. I had an editor when I put this poem into a collection of my poems, parables, and stories called Journeys to the Other Side of Shame. But the line was, as it is written here, I offer you my bowels. She was not comfortable with that. She said, change it to heart. And I tried to live with that, but I just felt like it needed to be bowels. You know, when I think of the bowels of the earth, it's like the very deepest, darkest, mysterious place that it needed to come from.
Well, it is, because our human existence feels like that. Our human existence still feels like it's in the primordial ooze. I mean, it's not, obviously, from what you look at it, but the way we act toward each other seems very reptilian and primordial. It's very still survival-based. I mean, certainly we haven't reached out very much beyond that, you know, in terms of our evolution. And so I like it because of that. The voice here. It's your voice, so I'm saying he's, but it's not a gender voice, to say that this very existence is the bowels. I mean, the insides of creation. I'm your spawn. You're spawning in. I mean, that it's so, yeah, until you can see, that's what you're in. You're in the ooze.
It reminds me of that poem that I wrote called Fondling the Finite. And it starts with, ooh, give me a nice sensual ooh, Rochelle. As I wriggle and writhe, keep going, and feel the sensual shifting of the earth's massage. Like some old whore made up to look appealing. But, anyway, that's my rendition of ooh.
Wasn't there more to it than
there
my,
was
like
more.
I'm trying to remember.
No. There was more.
It definitely was more than that. Oh, this is what happens when you're a septuagenarian.
Yeah, I feel
somebody.
This.
You know, you're a sexagenarian when you're in the 60s. That's much more fun than being a septa, a sexa.
I beg your pardon.
Well, it is. It's spelled S-E-X, sexagenarian. When you're in your 60s. And when you're in your 70s, you're a septuagenarian.
No more sex.
You're a septa.
Okay. All right. Having said that, fascinating as that is, I want to come back to
the divine lover.
That we are, the insights to think of our life in the universe as vast and as amazingly large as it appears to be. We are small within that, and even that universe is small within the amazingly grand, impossible to comprehend presence of all being.
I know, but to me, everything that's in me, I feel, is in everything that has life.
It's so you're talking holographic universe, that you can cut off a piece of it anywhere and you'll see the whole.
Yeah, that's what it feels like to me, that if I know, when I was 11 years old, I felt that if I knew me really, really well, I would know everything there was to know about life.
That is such a great key in to this song called, speaking of divine, Love's Divine.
Then the rainstorm came over me. And I felt my spirit break. I had lost all of my belief, you see. And realized my mistake. But time threw a prayer to me. And all around me became still. I need love, love's divine. Please forgive me, now I see that I've been blind. Give me love, love is what I need to help me know my name. Through the rainstorm came sanctuary. I felt my spirit fly. I had found all my reality. I realized what promise me you won't forsake. Cause love can help me know my name. Well, I try to say there's nothing wrong, but inside I felt me lying on and on. But the message here was plain to see. Cause I need love, love's divine. Please forgive me, now I see that I've been blind. Give me love, love is what I need to help me know my name. Cause love can help me know my name.
And as Seal sings in Love's Divine, love can help me know my name. And in many ways, that's the essence of what this poem is about. Because later on, the character says, you pointed out that line, I will wean you and woo you until you know that you are mine. You may cavort with other lovers for a time until you know that you know not. Then I will bare my breast and fill you with the rich, sweet textures of my being, for in our coupling you actualize. So there it again comes back to know our name and know who we are and to recognize ourselves. And the more fully we enter into, as this says, the friction moistened, the ecstasy of life, creation, the more fully self-knowing, self-aware, and I sense joyful, joyful that will be for all of us.
Oh, yeah, it is joyful every time I enter into that space. I mean, my question is always, why do I even walk away from it for a second, you know, but I think it's just, I'm like a little child. It's so big that I'm not quite ready for it. I can take it in small doses, but not in great big gulps. I have to have small little bits of it at a time so that I can digest it easily because I'm just not big enough, maybe. I love the your use of sexual, I mean, and I don't mean it in the sexual sense.
Yeah, you do.
But well, the sexuality of giving birth, the coupling, that it's so. It seems to me that in our physical bodies, the closest we come to really knowing that kind of ecstasy is in sexual coupling.
It is the closest that I'm aware of. And that's why it's runs through this poem, all the imagery. Spread your will and open to my caresses. To me, that's so sexual. And yet at the same time, instead of spread your legs or something.
Please, sir.
I beg your pardon. Spread your will. See, to me, I remember reading in the Arantia book that to do the will of God, to use that language, isn't a denial of your own will. It's an expansion of your will. And I think that's often overlooked by people, as if the will of God was go do this or go by that or don't see him or go there. No, it's about expanding will so that your capacity to will into existence becomes greater and greater and greater. And fortunately, there's kind of a check. The will only can expand as big as we allow our love to expand. They do go hand in hand. That's the universe puts a kind of constraint on our ability to will, I think.
Or our ability to love. But that's not possible. I mean, it's possible only in a moment prior to when it's bigger. Does that make sense?
No, but it just feels good knowing that something about it's going to get bigger.
Yeah, because I don't know what to say about that. Okay, I won't.
Don't go there.
I won't go there. But this sense of like, you know, before it goes to the next level, you're at the level you are before it.
Yes.
And so that's the sense of like, you don't know that your desire to enter into that unknown, which expands you, has to be there first. I really do think that there's something, even if it's not conscious, even if you're not aware of it, there's something in you that's ready to move beyond this moment into the fullness of the next moment. Like you're going to move into the next moment no matter what, but that the next moment is bigger than the moment that came before it. That's the thing that's exciting to me. And that's what happens with love. It's a constantly expanding experience of anything.
I look around this room that we're in. We're in an office, and I see a zillion items of one kind or another. I bet if we actually counted the number of different items, not even the repetition, there'd be 1,000 items in this space. And every one of those was conceived out of some amalgamation of love and will and thought in the creative process. And the divine lover is the creator lover. And to me, that's so important to remember, that we are being invited into creation both as the creator and the co-creator of what? Our own being and that which we give birth to, which is an outgrowth of our love and our imagination and our creativity and our way to meet the needs of necessities, which is why the second line says, I'm sorry that you must know tears before laughter. And I think of a little baby being born, and there's the crying. At some point later, there is laughter, and the second line in that stanza says, but in perfection's delay is the stuff that sons and daughters are made of. What do you make of that? What do you think the author's trying to say there, perfection's delay?
I'd like to ask the author.
Uh-huh.
Oh, author.
Yes.
Could you please tell me what in heaven's name did you mean by that?
Well, when I was writing that poem, I was sitting up my ranch in Montana, and I was thinking about, you know, all the horses and the cattle on the property, and I was seeing that it all didn't just show up perfect, you know, that's for sure. But in that kind of stretching for more of that perfection, that they sort of like, you know, stretched into themselves, and that the perfection's delay was turned out to be a good thing for most of them, although some of them were kicking and screaming all the way to perfection.
Well, if anybody can understand that, you're pretty good. You're probably there already. I think that's a little obtuse, but that's okay.
Really?
We don't have to be obtuse. We can be obtuse.
We did obtuse last week. let's look at it from another perspective, thanks to Leonard Bernstein and his Mass.
Said, let there be light, and there was light.
God said, let there be night, and there was night.
God said, let there be day, and there was day.
To follow the night.
And it was good, brother.
And it was good.
Said, let there be storms, storms to bring light
in all of its forms, for such as
herds and gaggles and swarms, swarms that have names
and numbers and norms.
And it was good, brother.
Gobble the gnats, so that the sprats
may nourish the rats, making them fat.
Fun, food for the cats.
And I grow fat, brother.
Can't wait to fat, brother.
Oh, I want to go dance, brother.
Hey, don't you fear no
rats. And God saw it was good.
God made it be good.
Created it good.
Created the
cats to nourish the
rats.
Leonard Bernstein, his math. Did you pick up on some of those lyrics? You know, God said it's good to be poor and it's good to be meek and it's good to go out and tromp on other people. I mean, we talk about it, it was full of irony, that song.
Yes,
And then it goes back to let there be light, and you know, all the.
I think it's interesting that in the way that we perceive the mystery, the unknown, the unfathomable, the undefined, and we want so much to give it life. We want, in order to feel that we exist, that we have importance, we have to control and give form to everything, and that the formless is scary to us. And yet, this piece, the divine lover, is giving form, but it's not really giving a face. What it's giving is a sense of activity. It's the way we interact with that which is formless, the way we interact with love in a way that we have not thought of it before. We give ourselves to it, and we become more as a result of it. we expand our consciousness by giving ourselves to that which has no sense of definition. So we become undefined. And we don't like that, most of us as human beings.
Which is why we do this show and incessantly talk about that which can't really be described.
And do our best to describe it.
Right. We're taking pot shots into the air. That's what I see the words to describe God is like having a BB gun or a little cork rifle shooting up into the sky going, no, that's it. And it falls back on ground. But just to remind you all that we are inside out the naked truth. And we're coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in Los Gatos, California, where we like to say,
clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
And you can join us by calling 888-627-6008. Just tell our good man at the helm there, Don, to interrupt us, and we'll take your call, because we'd love to know what you think about this,
the divine lover.
The divine lover.
I love the last two paragraphs of this. Break open and exchange with the earth and the water and with the stars. Drop your outer shell and give forth newness. I yearn for your fullness. Enter into me, for in that friction moistened is the ecstasy of life creation. Enter into the depth, breadth, and length of my womb, for I am your lover, the infinite. It is so, it feels so clear. It feels like a direction, like a recipe for becoming one with the universe. You know, just break open and exchange with the earth and the water and with the stars. Drop your outer shell, which is your illusions, all that stuff that you carry on that says that, oh, this is me, and I have to hold on to it because if I don't hold on to it, I won't exist. And we're being asked in this poem, but I think we're being asked by creation itself, to let go of that so we can become the more.
And to make the exchange, I was just rereading in the books that I often reference by Glenda Green, Love Without End and Keys of Yeshua. And he says, he being Yeshua, Jesus, Spirit of God, expressed through this particular window, living window, he says, I like it when you exchange. Exchange is good. Exchange is what keeps things moving. And he goes on to say, if people would exchange more, which would be kind of the opposite of hoarding and trying to keep it for oneself, so many of the social ills that we experience would not be manifest. So it behooves us to exchange often and deeply and what? With generosity and humility.
I think that you have to be willing to let go to exchange with other humans, because like, I remember as a little girl, I gave something to somebody and it came back all messed up and not taken care of the way I would have taken care of it. And I felt betrayed and I felt, I was hurt. I was very hurt. I mean, I felt diminished because this person refused to regard what I had given them with the same love that I had for it.
But they didn't say it wasn't without risk, the exchange.
Right. And I think that as a child that taking that risk was scary, because I think if you're going to have an exchange, it should be an exchange with another person, then it's real. But if it's just you giving something to someone to tear up and abuse, that's not an exchange.
Well, comes to mind for me is the idea that evolution, as we mature, we become better at making fair exchange and honorable exchange and responsible exchange. And in our immaturity, we have the basic hit them on the head and take it and keep as much as I can for myself.
Yes, that's right.
That exchange.
That's right.
I'm going to exchange this blow to your head with this log.
For the gold in your pocket.
for the little bit of barley in right. your pocket.
Right, right.
Well, what we have here, this line, I look upon your soul's nakedness and would cover you with the garments of progression. Which reminds me, in the Arantxa book, it says the meaning of life is in its adaptability. The value of life is in its progressibility. So here we have this naked soul, this emerging consciousness, beingness, that's just barely more than the flutter of an eyelid. And we are being covered with this garments of progression. And so what is progression? And how do we determine progression? I had this thought many years ago when I read this line. Again, it's from the Arantxa book, which says that the fact that there's order and intelligence in evolution suggest, or even they may even have used the word proof, I don't know, that there is a that there is order and progress. That's what it was, that there is order and progress, suggests that there is a creative mind behind it. And at that time, I asked myself, what is progress, and how would you determine progress? What is its criteria? And I may have shared this on another show.
I would have asked the same question.
And this is what I got, was you become progressively freer from antecedent causation. There's a big word. Another way of putting it, we become less and less an effect of prior circumstances and events, whether they're biological or social or intellectual or erotic, and we become more and more the cause. And to that extent, we become, as the creator, we are a co-causer of reality. So that's progress, is that I become more and more the agent of expression and the determiner of the world that I inhabit and manifest.
Could you say things like you become less a victim of circumstances and more a purveyor of circumstances?
I don't know about the purveyor part, but isn't that like the guy goes out and looks for gold?
Well, purveyor in the sense that you make it happen.
Yes. Yes, you make it happen. And the irony and the little game or the twist that the universe seems to play on us is that if you really want to have that happen, you have to expand more fully into this mystery that we call love. And again, it's full of risk because we step out into the unknown. But there is no emergence of that which is new, novel, without stepping into that unknown. And indeed, that's what he suggests here.
I love the last lines of this. When I will impregnate the cosmos with selves, and I will not rest my child, my love, until your face mirrors mine. And here we are we're being asked to mirror that which has no definition once again, you know, and to mirror it and to become it and to feel it and to know it and to live into it. And that to me is what I have to share. That's really important. To me, that exchange is the only exchange that is real. That I exchange that which I truly am with another.
Thank you.
I will wean you and woo you until you know that you are mine. You may cavort with other lovers for a time until you know that you know not. Then I will bare my breast and fill you with the rich, sweet textures of my being, for in our coupling you actualize.
I love that. Going over and over this piece, I realize how beautiful it is and how rich the images are, and the images fill me just the way the poem speaks of being filled. The images fill me and make me realize that my desire to be bigger every moment, to grow fully. There was a man who was proselytizing on the street the other day, and he came up to, and he says, "Have you been born again?" And I said, "I'm born every second." And a friend of mine says, "The first time I was born was enough for me," which I found wonderful. And then we go through this whole thing, and then this realization that every moment we have this opportunity to enlarge our perception, to enlarge our consciousness, to enlarge our souls, to enlarge our intellect, to enlarge everything. Every moment we take in stuff. When the poem says, "You may cavort with other lovers for a time," what I think of is like other philosophical truths, other beliefs, other gods.
Idols, addictions,
everything that tries to fill this hole that we're constantly trying to fill because we don't realize that it is already full. It's already full. It's just expanding. The cup is full, but the cup keeps growing, so that what's in the cup just keeps getting, and it gets enlarged. Does that make sense?
Well, what it reminds me of is the other day I was reading and recording and from Love Without End, and he's talking about the root of all evil. Glenda Green, the author, asks him, "Is money the root of all evil?" And he says, "No, greed is the root of all evil." And he goes on to suggest that, because she asks him, "Well, what causes that?" And he says, "Well, how much do you think that you would have to acquire or amass to be able to replace the love?"
You're never fulfilled.
No. And that's what it is to repent, to use that old word, which means to go the other direction, is to no longer look to the world. That's why the line says, "You may cavort with other lovers for a time till you know that you know not. And then I will bare my breast." I mean, just imagine the pure sensual spiritual delight of having the spiritual equivalent of being fed by the milk of the universe into your hungry, thirsty soul that's just sucking it up.
Yeah, it's very enriching. It's a very rich image. I'd love to read it all over again.
We will read it. But just to kind of set the stage for just a little bit, this is another song from Bernstein's Mass, because I think it's important that, as much as Rochelle and I love to talk about it and bring words to it, it really is a very simple thing, and that's the beauty of it. So heed this suggestion.
Sing God a simple song, loud or loud. Make it up as you go along, loud or loud. Sing like you like to sing. God loves all simple things. For God
Leonard Bernstein's Mass, a simple song. So we do have time, I think, to do the poem once more, and I hope that having kind of dissected or examined it has made it more recognizable, help us to appreciate how we fit into this unbelievably gigantic, mysterious unfolding. So, are you ready to try it, Shell? Let me give this a little introduction. This is from Sacred Earth, Call to the Divine.
You exist with me before, but unknowing. I would wrench you from myself in ecstasy, that you may know many-celled glory. I offer you my bowels, my insides, I give you to spawn in. My body will be your tabernacle until you are ready to bask in my sight.
I am sorry that you must know tears before laughter. But in perfection's delay is the stuff that sons and daughters are made of.
We must be indirect at first, owing to the disparity of our size and nature. But I will shed my absolute cloak and nestle naked with you in the raw earth. Feel under my robe and touch my purity. Let me wrap you in my wholeness.
I look upon your soul's nakedness and would cover you with the garments of progression. Our love will take on new forms so that you will satisfy me with new experience.
I will wean you and woo you until you know that you are mine. Oh, you may cavort with other lovers for a time, until you know that you know not. Then I will bare my breast and fill you with the sweet, rich textures of my being. For in our coupling, you actualize.
It is only as you cling to me that you know fulfillment and become identified. I would feed you with all my charms. Spread your will and open to my caresses. I would be all things to you.
Oh, little seedling, break open and exchange with the earth and the water and with the stars. Drop your outer shell and give forth newness. I yearn for your fullness. Enter into me, for in that friction moistened is the ecstasy of life, creation. Enter into the depth, breadth, and length of my womb, for I am your lover, the infinite.
I will impart my permanence to you, if you will have it. You are after my pattern. You are, for I have decreed that I will impregnate the cosmos with selves, and I will not rest, my child.
My child.
My love.
My love.
Until your face mirrors mine.
Until your face mirrors mine. The divine lover.
Well, that's about it for tonight. This is Inside Out, The Naked Truth. Our sponsor, thank you so much, is Go Raw. We'll be with you next week when we'll be exploring some other aspect of that which we cannot possibly comprehend.
Or even we'll explore things that we think we can comprehend.
Right. And pretend that we do comprehend. So, again, thanks for being with us. And remember,
resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.